it all together. Fast forward 10,000 years in the future, we got a shorter Horus running around the warp doing the exact same thing.
Listen up, Umi. This is a podcast with the most Tucker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host for the Alabama Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Evening, everybody.
Red Powell and Tanya Gates.
Hello.
How's it going?
Welcome. This is the first show of 2022. Depending on when this gets released. So
Happy New Year.
Yeah, exactly. And thanks everybody for joining us this year. If you're just new to the show, we do a weekly show talking about mostly Warhammer 40,000 stuff. We kind of meander through some other things as well, including hobby, tournaments, strategies, and all the like. In the middle of this episode, I'm actually going to have a quick vendor spotlight segment with Jay from our sponsor, Discount Games. After that break, we'll be back with us. An interesting thing is up for order right now on the Games Workshop site. I never expected to see this again. It is the miniature contents from the Warhammer 40,000 3rd Edition box set.
Man, this brings up feels for me.
I've said it before. This is, I think, the first 40K I ever saw, honestly. A friend of mine got this, and that's what kind of kickstarted it for me. I mean, to be able to see the old Dark Eldar and the Black Templar at the time and how it kind of progressed from there. It's pretty remarkable. I totally agree. I would have never thought this thing was going to come back out like this.
I do remember where I was when I opened it. I mean, I was in my house. I remember getting it out of the box. I used those orange templates until we stopped using templates. Those were my lucky templates.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, I probably still have them.
I had brothers that were a little bit older than me, so my first box that I ever got to play with was the second edition one with the cardboard Death Dread and all the grots that looked literally exactly the same. They were like, take your grot, push your gun into the two nodes on the grot. Your grot is complete. And the same was said for the bolter boys as well. You just push the bolter into the arms of the...
Yeah, there were two little pegs. They would just go right into...
Yeah, them. How far it came just in the design of the models from second to third ed was huge. Like, you had multi-part kits in the starter set. Oh, they were multi-part, right? They weren't push fit in that.
No, they're multi-part. And there were some... Yeah. They weren't the first multi-part, but they were definitely revolutionary at the time. You got all the armor, not all, but there was a selection of different armor marks in there, but they would eventually become, you know, the Space Marine Tactical Squad.
It was really cool at the time. I remember getting those Space Marines and just being like, this is the coolest thing ever. But funnily enough, I said something controversial on the in the pre-show, and I said, you know what, those Cavalite Warriors, they hold up, they're just fine. And the reason I said that was because I remember painting them and them being the easiest thing for like 9-year-old Adam to paint, because I just figured out how to dry brush, and you just dry brushed two colors, one lighter than the other, and your model was complete. Like, I mean, so after an undercoat, and to little old Adam, just having a complete model was like the best feeling ever.
But see, that makes sense, Adam, and you know, given what you said in the pre-show that clearly drew issue with
that context.
Because when you think back to it, yeah, the context adds to it, because think about something that I'm trying to think of a really good example. I know there's one out there of where, like, you know, you think back of something fondly, like when you were younger, and you're like, man, that is just amazing. And then you like watch it now and you're like, oh man, that is not good.
But there's some
just
movie
because it was so good. Yeah.
Where they're in the future and they're on roller skates.
Mm. Rollerball.
No, it's not Rollerball. That probably does hold up. I'll figure it out. The movie. It's had kids. They're like teenagers of kids escape, like searching for water or something.
Well, I mean, yeah. But take the Matrix, right? We just got the newest release.
There's
some classic element. I'm just saying, like that. That's what I'm talking about. You go back, you're like, oh man, this is... I remember this much better than what I'm actually watching.
I do love the first three movies, though. And I'm just going to pretend that the fourth one...
I haven't watched the fourth one, and I'm still deciding whether I want to. It's up there with like the latest of the Star Wars. I watched the first two of the latest three Star Wars, and then the second one, I was like, I'm done.
I'm out. People have to hit us up on social media to talk about The Matrix, because I actually do love I love The Matrix, and I did. We did watch it over the weekend. The number four.
So The Matrix is a weird one for me, because unlike Star Wars, where I can legitimately say they made two of the best movies ever of the original trilogy, two of the best movies ever, and one still quite good movie, being Return, is less good than the other two, but still very good trilogy. The Matrix, I'm like, the first one was great, and the second two, I don't know. Like, were they good? Or were they only good because the first one was that, like, brain-bendingly amazing?
Well, if you're wrestling with those, you're really going to like the fourth one. Anyway, not to blood Red's point, I definitely understand what you're talking about. Looking back with nostalgia in your lens.
Because, I mean, let's just be real, Adam. Take the now. Like the Dark Eldar of now, and compare it. Don't get me wrong, I do like some of the aesthetic. I like the broader look of the older Raiders. I wish that, like,
I
take the new and the old, like, kind of merge that aesthetic. I mean, of course, you got to give credit to the old stuff because Vect actually existed. But at the same time, like, the new stuff is just mind blowing in comparison to what they were able to do now compared to what they were able to do then.
So I guess I'm the only one who doesn't have nostalgia for this.
Very true.
And I actually, I sent Skari a text message when I saw that this box set came out. And I was like, what do you think of the box set? Because you're the target demographic, right? Those are his two armies that he played.
Old, like, the first Templar, Yukari player.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm probably not going to get it. And I was like, I don't get it. Like, I have no nostalgia for it. So I'm just like, they're just Marines and goofy looking Cavalite warriors. So.
They're not just Marines. You got to admit, these things are, like, they look like real tight. Like, these are the guys that you could believe actually fit in the drop pods that you have now. You know what I mean? Like, are crunched.
Yeah. It's just also, those bases are so small for those Marines.
Oh, such a little mini Marine.
That was actually the cool thing of when the 32s came out. It's like, when you put the model on there, you're like, man, this just feels beefier. Like, the whole thing just, like, I'm down with this. I'm actually, what makes more hobby work? Don't care. Love it. Gonna do it.
I love that I get to walk with you guys down memory lane here.
Yeah, I think it's neat they're bringing this as an option. It's like, okay, if you don't want it, you don't have to get it. But if you want it, or wanted to revisit this, or wanted to complete a squad or something, or you got someone to trade and you just want to flesh out more, or you wanted a different look, maybe you are creating, like they mentioned in the article, some Trueborn out of these things. And to Adam's point too, I did love painting them. So Dark Eldar, as they were before, you know, pre-Jukari, were like mentioned in Warhammer Journal. And so I got started kind of building up an idea of what they would be long before we ever saw them as figures. And so when they came out in this box set, I was very keen to get them going. And the same thing, I remember being quite proud of my original paint jobs, because these models, they were just so easy to paint. I went with a purple, so it was purple armor and silver helmets.
Oh, nice. Like a dark purple, like a Neggaroth Knight, or?
Yeah, like a very dark, well, maybe it's, you know, like lich purple dry brushed over black. Exactly nice. What Adam was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe, I don't know if it's quite lich, but one of those purple colors. And then one other little lighter dry brush, and the armor is immaculate. Dry brushed silver or armor washed bolt gun metal, whatever it was, over the helmets. Red in the eyes and the lenses were very easy to get some paint brushes into, and you had a great looking army.
I destroyed the models. So naturally the Marines were Dark Angels, right?
Naturally.
Very thick, extremely thick. In fact, I'd be surprised if you could still see the vents on their face plates. It was Adam was straight out of the pot.
You were the cautionary tale.
This is 8 or 9 year old Adam, straight out of the pot. Don't put it on a pallet. Straight on the pot, on the model. Just lather that boy up. And so I used the same green to dry brush the Cabalites as I did for the base coat for the Dark Angels, and there was no highlight. It was, and then I just got some white, mixed it with the green, and that was the second layer.
Okay.
And I was so proud.
That doesn't sound bad.
Yeah, it was great.
I just loved all the surplus of land speeders that went into the market after this.
Well, isn't that the tale, though? The tale is like the surplus land speeders from this one, and then it was surplus, was it was the Defcopters from Black Crag in 4th?
Yes.
Fifth. Yeah, they were.
Yeah, and it was just like a flood of Defcopters.
Black Reach. In McCrag are different.
Black
boxes.
Crag was the fantasy. It was fantasy. Sorry.
Oh.
Yeah. Black Reach. I wanted to point out. So this thing is going for $100 US. Yep. And Indominus went for $200 US. I want to just point out how far box sets have come, guys. So for $200 for Indominus, you essentially got more than like 2.5 times more than you get in this box. Like, this whole box is equivalent to the 20 Necron Warriors you got from Indominus, essentially. The 20 Necron Warriors and the Canoptic Reanimator for the Landspeeder. So all the extra is just gravy. And you're just like, wow. You know? It's pretty impressive how good the box sets have become, really.
Yeah, too true. This is high on the feels, though. Like, I like that it exists. I like that they were, I mean, I don't know if, you know, had the courage to release it under the scrutiny that the models would certainly get, because there's such a, you know, got difference in the model technology of today.
I have a question, since I wasn't around when this originally came out, but are these paint jobs pretty like classic to that era as well?
Mm-hmm.
They are, yes. The paint jobs, I believe. Aren't they?
There's the also same this weird, I say weird, but there was like this traditional thing. Tanya, have you seen the Goblin green bases?
Yeah, yes.
That's totally a thing. That's just like there was a standard, right? There was an understood standard. Yeah. It didn't matter.
That's exactly
like,
right.
Scheme or anything. Everybody, like, you were supposed to have Goblin green bases, and you're supposed to have little flecks of whatever, you know, fake shrubberies on there. That was absolutely a thing.
Oof.
Yeah, the ring of the base were Goblin green too. Like, it was,
yeah. Oh yeah. It was sacrilegious not to do it. And there's a really funny, it's not even just a meme, but the man, I can't believe, I'm sorry. I apologize to whomever out there, but of this like painting standard that essentially was established out there, where it's like, all right, you're going to paint it like this. You're going to wash it with this. The base is going to be Goblin green, to include the rim. Right. And then, you're going to just douse it in like high gloss finish. And then that's it. And you're never going to touch. You can only play those 2,000 points. Like, that's it. You never touch it again.
If your question was are the paint jobs on the Games Workshop site now, were those the paint jobs from the time? No, these are repaints or glow-ups.
Is it the same idea? Like, are the colors approximately the same?
This is how I remember it. This is exactly, like, even down to the gunmetal bolters.
I don't think that's the way the Drukhari were painted.
Oh, that might be true. Maybe that's right.
They were that dark red with like metal heads. Do you remember that?
Maybe that's why I went metal heads on mine, because it has
in
the box.
I remember that pretty emphatically.
Oh, like, I can dark just look red. Let me metal look at them separately.
Oh, yes, you are right.
I do like their fancy hats, though.
Oh man! And
yeah, again, took those
main hair,
took those dry brushes well. I mean, this is as far as like ease of getting into play, and you actually got a fair chunk of the Dark Eld. I mean, the points were, I think, pretty equivalent, 20 for them. But you could play this. You could play the box set, which is pretty cool.
Was it balanced? I don't know. I just see a lot of Space Marines there and a lot of squishy elves. But
it was no those. You gotta. Dark Elves were a terror. They were absolutely a terror. Dark Lances, it was bad.
If you got one Archon.
I just looked it up. This is a total glow up. You're right. They had the red with the white plumes for the Dark Elder. Mm. And there was a lot more white on the like Templars. Like the side wings and the top canopy bit of the Landspeeder were white back then. It's still cool, though.
It's very cool. I mean, again, I like it, you know, whatever. If somebody wanted to get this and do that or recreate whatever experience that they had, you know, what is it, back in 98, then cool. I do seriously remember where I was. It came with a certificate that said you're one of the first owners of Warhammer 40,000 third edition. It came with a dog tag metal charm on a dog tag necklace.
That's tight.
Yeah, it was nice. But again, I remember it vividly. Playing it, being so happy, calling my buddy on the phone, a landline, saying, it's here.
Amazing.
And then building.
I love hearing all these stories, just because I just came into the hobby at the end of 7th. So this is really cool to see like a little bit of GW history that I wasn't around for.
Remember building those Space Marines and just being like super proud of kitbashing some bits from the previous Marine box set, like putting an arm on one, posing one guy like he was looking for snipers in the trees, like right in the
face. Did you paint them red?
Oh yeah, they were definitely red. I can't tell you what shade of red that they were at this point in time because I've been through several over the years. But they are 100% Blood Angels.
Do you still have those models?
No, I don't. I have some, but not all of them.
So I haven't really gotten rid of anything that I've painted because I like to keep my old stuff around to see how far I've come. So I still have. But you know what? Like, I still have like my first Chaos Space Marines that I ever painted, and I must say they have gloss varnish on them. It's awful. But the paint jobs themselves are not that bad, actually.
That feels offensive in the mind's eye.
They're just so shiny.
It's like so. Unless it might work for certain legions, though.
I could see like Death Guard being a little bit shiny and slippery looking.
Black Legion.
They're definitely
or
shiny.
Emperor's Children.
Yeah. There's the Flawless Host.
Yeah.
And the Pyre.
Looks like slick.
I really like the Pyre color scheme. Mm-hmm. Anybody know where the Pyre come from? What the Pyre?
No.
Where they come from?
Yeah. What gene seed are they from?
No. Never
heard of the Pyre?
No, I have heard of the Pyre.
I have not.
Let me see if I. Well, I'll put it in the show notes. I'll put it in the show notes.
Send you some links.
Yeah, a link in there. No, it's a cool color scheme. I remember seeing it. It's one of those things that's so evocative in the old books. You're flipping
through.
Are
they orange?
Yeah, they're orange. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I remember them. Yeah, I don't know anything else about. They're orange and black.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember them now. They looked awesome. I don't know anything about them now.
Oh, no, they have an unknown origin. It's kind of a trick question.
Ah.
Dang.
Good job.
It's actually a literal plea. Anybody know? Somebody help me out. I'm trying to work on some lore here.
They ain't no Sons of Malice.
Yeah, fair enough. But I do like always love the color schemes. That's one of the coolest things about the books, looking through and flipping through and seeing there's those color scheme alternates. I am curious as to how many people picked up this third edition made to order. And then if this is like a test run for, you know, other starter set things.
Hmm. I'm actually impressed they're able to do it because you'd think the sculpts and the molds are in pretty bad nick. Like
maybe they just found it. Okay. Somebody was opening a box. Like, whoa.
Check this out. Let's do these. Maybe, I mean, in all likelihood, I wouldn't be surprised if GW mothballed. Like when they make the molds for mass production, they mothball a set or two. Because that would make sense for a lot of what they do. Of course, a lot of tradition and all that good stuff involved.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure the helmet's probably the same scale. But I loved this set because it's where each squad of 10, there were representation of different marks of armor.
Yep.
And then the sergeant, if I believe you had that raised collar, that mark, I guess eight, was it eight? Seven, eight armor?
Hold on, I'm thinking. Yes, it was mark eight had the like collar well kind of deal, yeah. Right? The gorget.
Yeah, almost positive that's in this set.
Really? You think they had Mark 8 in third edition?
I think so.
Mm. I think that they were rocking 7. I'd be surprised if there was an 8.
I'm going to find it on the sprue.
I think Blackreach had some 8.
Fun question. Best hats. We had that before. Tanya loves the hats. Best hats. 40K. Let's go.
Best hats? Like, yeah, hats. Is this including helmets?
Yes, including helmets. And this is 40K, Sigma, everything.
Oh, you're going to open it up.
Let's open it all the way up. The whole model range of GW, all Citadel miniatures, best hats.
Well, I got to throw a shout out to remember when Age of Sigmar dropped and like the first thing, there were the Sigmarites, whatever, the gold dudes. It wasn't them, but it was Khorne. Like Khorne showing up. I'm not a huge fan of like, it makes no tactical sense to just have these massive like Khorne headdress things, right? But it's get it. They're like bloody barbarians and they're really trying to make a statement on it. But you got to admit that to go along with everything else, those Khorne helmets were pretty like, they took it to the next level. You're like, okay, I thought this was a bad idea before. You just like take it. These guys are wearing literal like concrete slabs on their heads at this point. There's a reason why they have those traps. You know what I mean? Like, their muscles are ridiculous because they're carrying concrete blocks around.
That's part of the training.
It absolutely is.
I want to correct myself. It looks like the sergeant or whatever command upgrade is not in this kit, and that's where it was. So that's where you got your missile launcher and flamer and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Dang. Yeah.
So all right. Who wants another punt at the crazy hats?
I don't know if it counts because I just don't know if it counts, but I think that the Avatar of Cain has one of the most fanciest hats.
Is that because of his face?
That's a good one.
No, it's just that got like the one. Weird like berserker-esque like
it does.
Wings coming up, but then it's got like this like weird cylindrical thing in the middle, and it's just like, I know it's supposed to have like a top knot or whatever. Yeah. Like
if that hair was in front of his face, could not see it. Like way too long.
Continuing with that theme, if you haven't seen the Varangard models, they're like Archaon's Chosen from Age of Sigmar. Their helmets are off the chain. They're some of the best looking helmets.
I do love. They're not outrageous. They're not outrageous enough, though. But they have quite good helmets.
Are you kidding me? Look at one of those. His horns are like four times the length of his head. Like
that
there's
is true.
One helmet.
That is
oh, like one of those. What is it?
Quite proportional, though. It doesn't look wrong. If you want like a model that is 80% helmet, like there are some Lumineth Realm Lords that are just like.
are we not limited to this to Warhammer 40,000 for helmets?
No, wide range.
I throw it over anything and everything. Just Citadel miniatures.
Oh, best is the Chaos Dwarves. Like they have the best ads.
Oh, the second.
Although Tanya, I think, has the best actual. The Avatar Kane is probably takes the cake, but a close second has to be the Chaos Dwarves.
I completely forgot about Chaos Dwarves. My vote's the Chaos Dwarves. The old Chaos Dwarves, the old ones. They're so ridiculous. I love them.
But like in this vein of like we're talking third edition stuff, think of like old school Night Lords. You're like, really? That's supposed to like
lightning.
That's gonna
bat
scare
wings.
Everybody. Yeah, bat wings everywhere. Like before, like Avenged Sevenfold was even a thing. These guys are trying to rock it out. Like third edition, right? And it's like it's wow. I mean, these are the scariest people in the Chaos Trader Marines, and they've got massive, goofy-looking bat wings on the sides of their helmets. Like, all right. They must have done some pretty horrible stuff to still be scary after that.
So I will put it out there that I think the most ridiculous helmets are the Alaris Stoneguard, the ones with the top hats with the cow head on the top. That is the craziest hat I ever seen.
Those seem on brand to me, though. They don't seem ridiculous. Like ridiculous is not how I would describe them.
So if you took the length of the hat from where it joins, like at the bottom at the chin, all the way to the top, it's the same length as them from the floor to their chin. It's absurdly tall. It's so stupidly tall.
Can you imagine, like all of them like hanging out in the break room or something?
I remember we had a chat and we called like helmets like that neck breakers because someone would just come up and just hang off the side, neck break, and your neck would just snap. Like if you had a strap around your chin, you could just like tug on one side and crack their neck from leverage.
Yeah. So like, military history time. Like Adam, you know what's up with like these conical helmets, right?
I have had this chat, but from the mouth of the expert, lay it on us.
I don't know about expert, but I mean, conical helmets, right? Way back when, I mean, there was an actual like advantage to them in that how they were marked. And I mean, other than the fact that you were smart enough to have a helmet on, right? I'm looking at you, all you dumb space marines.
bald and screaming.
Yeah, in space. But the conical helmets were supposed to help with, if arrows hit them or whatever, like especially with people aiming and whatnot, like it threw off all of that, right? It actually it was defensive against that kind of deal. Now, my real problem with that is that we have moved beyond that. Mm-hmm. We're in like bullet time, right? Like, you know, it's not about arrows. Yeah, not just the Matrix, but like people should really be worried about the fact that you can be seen or that you stand out because you have these ridiculously tall helmets that don't help you hide or anything. I really think
custodians don't need to
hide.
Don't
get me wrong. Oh man, you're telling me.
I think I'm just going to put it out there, but I think World War I really proved the length of hat was detrimental.
I think I appreciate that the new Rangers actually like have moved away from some of the conical helmet look in the new aesthetic. So I'll give them that.
Oh, you mean the Eldari?
Yeah, the new Eldari. Yeah.
The ones that they previewed.
Can I give an honorable mention?
Absolutely.
Rubric Marines.
Oh, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, you're lucky that they're automatons and dusty, because talk about neck breakers. Those dudes are running it. Yeah. Too.
It's like having a satellite dish on your head.
Yeah. So they're trying to just tune in the Emperor so they could make nice.
We miss you, Daddy.
Yeah, that is. Like, I love it that this stuff can exist, though, because there's nothing too big in 40K. There's nothing too ridiculous.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, that's like, I got to say, you know, outside of the proportions of Terminators, which I think that they've like slowly but surely moved into it, moved into better spaces with like, you know, the Gravis armor and everything. But the man, Terminator helmets, I never really got like, and I don't get me wrong, having seen, you know, all the different versions of them at this point. The ones that we grew up like started with, and, you know, Tanya, for historical reference, like what you see Chaos Space Marine Terminators look like now, like those rhino looking helmets minus the tusks, like that's what Terminator helmets looked like for a while. It wasn't until like even 30K that we saw variant Terminator helmets. And so those goofy looking helmets, I was always like, man, who came, like, where'd this one come from? I'm not dogging it here. I'm saying like, it just seemed like such a drastic aesthetic jump from anything else with their like snouts and everything they have.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a jump.
One more honorable mention.
Okay.
Because we must. I've, even though I love the models, I've never understood the Custodes helms. I'm like, why are they that shape?
It's such a throwback to the art, you know, where we talked about it, where they weren't even wearing shirts, just wearing trench coats and a helmet.
It's such a specific and weird shape. Like, it's kind of star-like, but conical, and yeah, it's weird.
I hate those helmets. So I am starting a Custodes army, and I hate those helmets. I have one model that has that helmet, and it's my Vexilis. Everybody else just has like hooded.
I actually went and bought one of the Sagittarum upgrade kits, so all mine have Sagittarum heads on them. And actually, they look really, really cool on the Terminators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of like these hoods. They have like the same kind of. I mean, they feel a little bit like they came from a Space Marine or something like that. But I don't know. They just like look so menacing on the Custodes.
I'm just thinking, like, because I've got a godload of like the Inner Circle Knight hooded heads. They look really cool. Like, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, something similar. Yeah.
Yeah, they look really cool on Custodes because they're almost perfect in size. I mean, all heads almost in 40K for Space Marines and such. Yeah, that'd be cool. Ah, great idea.
We're gonna take a quick break, but before we do, we're gonna actually come back with that couple minute vendor spotlight I want to mention, so we won't have the normal sponsor segment in the middle. It would be something a little bit different, maybe a little bit more exciting. I want to talk about that I got to use the Dark Craving stratagem today, where
it's a milestone, guys.
It's a milestone. Heroically intervene a fetid bloat drone.
Yeah, everyone wants to know exactly how that works because nobody's seen it happen.
If you're within 6 inches of an opponent in their charge phase, at the end of the charge phase, you can heroically intervene with a bloat drone. And I got to do it, and I was very happy. And let's just say some Marines went back in the box. that's a, you know, you gotta know where your opponent's gonna want to be. You're gonna want to be on an objective, and if you got this big angry possessed drone on there, it's not gonna go well for him.
Not to stay down, guys.
It's only 1 CP. How could you not do it? All right. Well, today we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with the vendor segment, and then we'll be back with us a few minutes after that. See you in a minute.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a vendor spotlight segment. My name is Paul. I got Jay from Discount Games. Man, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Yo, man, thanks for joining me. And also, thanks for being a sponsor of the show. You know, couldn't be doing it without you. And I know we bring you on from time to time to say hey to folks, and so people know who they're supporting. But I thought, hey, you know, this is as we wind down the year, first episode of the new year, actually. Wanted to bring you on again and say hello.
Awesome. Excited to be on. And thanks for all the content you create.
Oh, I appreciate that. You know, this is when we direct people. It's like, oh, and don't forget to ask Jay, you know, about what's going on. Well, this now they can find you. Where can they find you if it's not just through your email address?
Yeah, email is easiest. jay@discountgamesinc.com. Our website is discountgamesinc.com. And as the ads you run say, contact me for info on how you can save even more money on your Games Workshop products.
And you actually, you've got some other things going on. You're a podcaster. You play other games. Like, you are an actual gamer, not just a purveyor of fine gaming products.
That's true. I used to have my podcast Chain Attack used to focus on War Machine and Hordes, and back in the day I won the world championship for War Machine and Hordes, and now Chain Attack is more focused on geek topics and not War Machine and Hordes. I do another podcast, The Meta, that I interview War Machine and Hordes players, and so that's kind of the content creation that I do as well.
That's good. Well, I know it's been cool, and you've been doing it for a number of years. And that is a pretty active thing you do. So you have you stay busy is where I'm going with that.
Yeah, it's true. It is do stay busy. But that's good. I guess I wouldn't know what to do with myself if I didn't. So
well, at your store, they can go to the website and check it out. They haven't already, but you have all kind of stuff. It's not just miniature games.
Yep, that's true. We do for the website. You know, a lot of what we carry the most of is miniatures games and painting and hobby stuff, but we do have some more stuff as well, and so check that out.
I hear you have a visitor.
Yes, the three cats have jumped up on the bed.
Oh, they know something exciting is happening.
That's right.
The last time we spoke, you were into a Crisis Protocol. You still keeping up with that?
I had a podcast with that, and we haven't been doing that as much lately because my co-host has started dating someone, and that's cut into his free time.
Oh, but the actual the hobby limiter there.
But I'm hosting a game night tonight at my store, Gameopolis, where I'm going to be playing that, and I have every miniature in that game painted, and it's been a lot of fun to play.
Do you prefer like the skirmish level type stuff for games? Is that as far as that goes?
Of late, I've been enjoying that a little bit more, just because. I guess it's kind of twofold. I've kind of gotten to where I prefer probably the hour and a half game length as opposed to like the two and a half hour, just because. Life is busy, I guess.
That's one of the cool things like Kill Team. You could sit down and play two or three games in the span that you could play a full, you know, what would be thought of as a full size tabletop
right.
game.
Yeah. So that's definitely one of the things that I've been enjoying about that size of game.
Well, awesome. Well, Jay, I won't keep you too long, but I really wanted to bring people on and talk. And you actually have, you also on your website or as an extension, you actually have people can find like tournament list and things like that.
I mean, yes.
Yeah, again, you have a lot going on.
Go check out the website. One of the things I want to plug with it is, so the person I've been working with on the Games Workshop tournament list, Trevor Atridge, or Tactical Tortoise, he does a bunch of 40K content, and he's been the person who's been inputting the list related to Games Workshop on their website, and so... You can go check those out as well.
All right, maybe people see something they like and want to pick up some miniatures, you know. So the
circle
of life moves on. Well, Jay, I really appreciate you taking the time. People can check out his website, hit you up an email, get some stuff. And I just want to thank you again for being a part of the team here and sponsoring the show.
You bet. Thank you.
We'll see you.
All right.
FTN is also on Facebook. Please like us at www.facebook.com/ForgeTheNarrative.
We are back. Thanks for sticking with us. So we got a preview today. This is when we're recording this, about the new Warzone Nachman Vigilus Alone supplement coming in 2022. What do y'all think? I mean, y'all check out the preview?
I feel like if all they did for campaign books with supplemental rules was one every 6 months, I think I'd be okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Seems like, is Abaddon going to win this time? That's the question I have.
So what this is, though, is a kind of a six-month self-contained season, I guess. It lasts 6 months, focused on different corners of the galaxy, and they're kind of going to have a narrative tied in to each of the seasons, which I think is a really cool idea. You guys remember some of the global campaign GW have done. I suppose they're not going to go that crazy with it, but they might do something.
Well, I love the idea of them. Let me say that. I'm happy that they existed. I can't imagine the nightmare it was to try to stitch everything together in the back end. But
And they said each one will be accompanied with campaign books. And even have they even said we're going to get a lot of Crusade rules as well. And Army of Renowns, Codex Supplements, along with Legendary Missions, et cetera, et cetera. I believe they've said that they're going to be doing points updates for each season. So that might mean we're getting 2 points updates a year rather than one that we're used to for competitive play.
If you look at the balance update, we got when that was coming down, we got the idea those were going to happen somewhat frequently. And I wouldn't be surprised if, I should say not frequently, but on routine, on the regular.
Apologies. So I don't think it means it's every 6 months. They've said the first season introduces a new Grand Tournament mission pack, which provides a framework for the next 6 months of competitive play. There will be new missions, new secondary objectives, updated points costs, et cetera, et cetera. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be every single 6 months.
Yeah. And we already got to actually preview some of those, the new mission, like the mission secondaries.
Yeah.
And how they'll be, we'll spoil it, or you can go back and watch the Warhammer Twitch, about some of the stuff coming up in this mission pack. I have to imagine it's in there. But that's a response to making the game, more interactive, more engaging, listening to, people play, getting the experience for everyone playing the games. And now it's cool getting linked to a story and stuff with the Nachman Gauntlet. That's what was in the video, which was cool. I don't think I've ever seen it or paid attention to it like they animated it. But as soon as they mentioned Crusade rules, I thought, oh, Red's going to like that.
Oh, yeah, man, I was hyped. And I mean, I've enjoyed all the releases they've had so far. It's been a little more specific across the board. There was some, the different campaign settings they've had, ranging from the Necron, like Archaeotech excavations that were in the first part when that first dropped, and then as it moved to the Death Guard, and keeping up with all of the White Dwarfs, like I have all the material that's come out, it's been really cool how it's built upon itself. So I'll be interested to see how they continue that, if they continue that, integrating it between the White Dwarfs and the seasons dropping. And it's really cool to return to the Gauntlet, right? Because Vigilus, we remember back 8th edition, like they've since gotten rid of the specialist detachments that came along with Vigilus, right? I mean, we remember the associated rules build or expansion that it was, that you essentially had to have one of the Vigilus books to have access to some of those specialist detachments. Mm-hmm. And then we go into the story, right? I mean, and like you said, is this really going to be Abaddon's, like, is this going to be his go? Because, I mean, last time, referencing Vigilus, I mean, showed up, he wrecked some people, he got in a fight with Marnius,
destroyed Cadia.
And then but with Vigilus specifically, and Vigilus Ablaze, I mean, he did all that only to have the vengeful spirit almost stolen out from underneath him. And he's like, well, I've got this huge strategic victory where I could literally kill heroes of the Imperium, or I could give up my ship in the meantime. And so I probably shouldn't give up my ship. And so that's what he does. He bounces. It's like, I'm not going to describe it as anticlimactic, but it
was very unsatisfying.
It hurt.
That was kind of, I'm not going to lie. That after trying to read and enjoy some of the Psychic Awakening fluff, and then that was kind of the next rules-based fluff that I got into. I have been a little bit disenchanted with some of the campaign writing. Some
Maybe
of the
destroyed Cadia in Psychic Awakening.
Oh, no, he didn't. That was in the
It was, yeah. Cadia was in Psychic Awakening. Correct. Vigilus Ablaze was later. Yeah.
Not trying to revise history.
Cadia was at the end of 7th edition. Cadia was a Gathering Storm.
Correct.
Cadia.
And not then we had Psychic Awakening.
Psychic Awakening was the end.
We're all getting messed up with all these different expansions. Yeah. My bad.
It's
Look, Cadia's gone. I just wanted everybody to get right with it.
It lives everywhere that it needs to, which is in our hearts.
Does and it even need to live there, though?
Well, I don't know. Given some of the new story stuff, I got to say, it makes having a destroyed planet like that is making for some really good story with some of these post, you know, destroyed Cadians that I'm reading about. I'm actually enjoying that a lot.
And we got some good
strategies. Guess what? It's just like Tana. You sure did, man. That Overwatch is out of control thanks to Cadian.
Well, so let's go like one step into the theory about it is what could be a satisfying outcome for it? Because obviously Abaddon is not going to take over the universe. That's not happening. I mean, and I don't think that we'll ever think that it's going to happen. But what is a satisfied outcome for him that still gives him credibility as the big bad villain?
I want to see him win on one side of the rift.
Well, I want to see Dante's on, so he got to pick another side.
That's the assumption is that he goes over to that side and doesn't necessarily destroy Baal or anything, but is conquering or doing a great job of conquering part of the galaxy. Because as it sits right now, the rift open, and he's taken, as far as I can tell in the fluff, he's taken one swing at Vile at Vigilus, missed, and has been twiddling his thumb since. It's kind of anticlimactic. Like, he literally won and then went about doing nothing with that win. Essentially, Gilliman just decided to kick his ass, and he got his ass kicked with the Indominus Crusade. And so I think I would like to see a legitimate, like, establishment of a Chaos Empire or foothold, something that resembles some kind of a kingdom in the galaxy. And I think that would be cool and awesome. Like an Imperium Secundus, but it's,
but it's like a spaceport that they control, and now there's direct...
No, but it's like a region of space. Like, they control some anchor from
the warp that they can have a conduit to launch things from. Like, if we, a moon base, whatever, to get to Mars.
Not counting the Eye of Terror, not counting the Maelstrom, apparently.
But I mean more than that. I mean, because that's what they've had forever. I want, a region of the galaxy to just be like, you see this bit? You don't go there. That's the Chaos Stronghold. That bit's the World Eaters. This bit's the Black Legion. That bit is, Ahriman's fun party palace. I want that to be a thing. Like an Ultramar, there's 500 worlds. I want to see a portion of the galaxy carved up and, we skip ahead 60 years and we've just become aware of the fact
it's that it's like three neighborhoods down and go there.
Yeah, exactly right. And it becomes a legitimate battle in the galaxy, like an actual battle in the galaxy. It's always just been like, they're in the Eye of Terror, don't let them get out. Well, they got out. So what have they done with getting out? They've done literally nothing so far.
I'm down. Okay. That's a cool thing. I haven't really thought about this. I was just thinking about it. We were during the break as to feeling, wanting Abaddon to be this big threat, established, awesome model, cool lore. The more I've read about him in the Horus Heresy and the Siege of Terra, I love it.
Me too. They've just written him to be like a warrior personified. It's fantastic.
And then what can he do? Knowing that he's not going to take over. I shouldn't say knowing. Assuming he's not going to take over the Imperium. What is a victory?
I mean, I'm not going to go as far as Adam to say, I just want another Eye of Terror, because that thing. But I do think closing off the gauntlet, creating really two halves of the Empire for now, I think.
Yeah, collapsing the gauntlet, lighting those. That may be a conceivable outcome.
Yeah, that was what I thought. I thought the whole point of him going for the gauntlet was, let's say he wins it, he floods Chaos into Imperium Nihilus, and starts to conquer it, and then we can have a whole massive storyline over there where it's Dante versus Abaddon, awesome. And with struggling reinforcements coming through in trickles, it would be a cool thing. You could do that over a couple of years to wrap up such a storyline. It'd be really awesome to build up.
Yeah, where Gilliman just can't get through.
Exactly, yeah. Gilliman can't get through to give him enough resources, so it's literally Dante and what he's got left trying to hold off. It would be cool.
Maybe he has to strike a deal with Magnus.
There's a lot of opportunities there. Or he can strike another deal with the Necrons, He's been there, done that.
Not Dante. Shake Gilliman. Dante's not striking a deal with nothing no more. It's all all axe.
Sure, okay.
It's all axe. Palace.
I'm reading Darkness in the Blood again, and it's pretty cool. There's some good segments with Dante. Dante is no slouch.
He is no slouch. I don't know who's so Dante is really well written, and so is, I feel like, Logan Grimnar is really well written as well.
Do you mean the characters or the novels about those?
The novels. The way they're being portrayed over multiple decades, essentially.
Yeah.
Logan's always been described as this pretty upstanding guy by Marine standards, by the standards of the day. And Dante's up there as well. Dante seems like a legitimately pretty honorable combatant to all.
There's interesting. So in Darkness and the Blood, and no spoilers, but there you get kind of a flashback to Dante before he was Chapter Master.
Mm, yeah. Sounds cool.
And there's a decided difference in how he is now than how he was then. And it got me thinking about like other, you know, I think there's a reason that we consider like Logan Grimnar and Vulcan may be better allies to humanity.
Oh, okay. So he's got some shady stuff too. Because
I don't know. There's no shady stuff. Just perspective, I think.
Sounds kind of shady. A little shady.
No, so I didn't even mention Azrael. Yeah, he knows what he is. It's fine. interesting.
We'll see.
I would like another storyline I would like to have some resolution to is Drago. Is he just going to be like bouncing in and out of reality forever? Is that just his thing now?
I don't see any reason why not.
I mean, is he just invincible? Like, he's bouncing in and out of the warp, perpetually, like, fighting on every side.
You know my theory. He's a Horus clone.
I love that theory, by the way. I do really like that. That's an awesome thread. That's an awesome plot point that you could use to explode a narrative.
Well, I don't know that he is, and I don't know that we
either. You don't even need to find out if he is. You could build a narrative around if, but, maybe, you know, what if.
What is the evidence that, like, I'm guessing this is like a fan theory?
So glad you asked.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, here we go.
So
in the
Horus Heresy series of books, where Horus goes into the warp. I think it's at the Gate of Molech. I think it's the Battle of Molech, where Martarian has to wound him, and almost grievously wound him, and then he goes into the warp, and then in the warp he travels aeons, going through fighting battles, wars, defeating greater demons, the whole shebang, all on this basically vision quest, which is almost like page for page, word for word, exactly what Drago does.
It's spicy.
Interesting.
And they're both like, you know, top of the food chain space marines.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, and there is a lot of, I'm going to put out question. There's a lot of very like Michael Bay-ish writing around Drago at times about him being just an all-conquering, all-defeating, like the guy soloed Mortarian essentially.
Mortarion's house, like walked in his house.
Yeah.
You know, ate some chips.
Yeah. Slapped him in the face, kicked his ass, literally carved his name into his heart in the fluff. Like, you're telling me this guy can do that and he's not empowered some way further than just a chapter master.
I mean, I love that story, by the way.
It's the Bolter Pawn in me goes like, this is great. But then my reason kicks in and I'm like, I don't like that he did that in the fluff.
But if it all lines up though. Like, if you theorize that all the brotherhoods of the Grey Knights are built off of Traitor Legion stock, you know, the Death Guard guy from Loken.
It makes sense. Because Loken and what's his face? Lovely Death Guard boy.
Garrow.
That's it. Yeah. They were two of the first Knights, right? Which were the foundings of the Grey Knights.
Well, you don't know that yet. It's just heavily implied.
Yeah, that's true.
I think all the brotherhoods are like formed, and I think if you scratch below the surface, you might be able to like piece some of that. I mean, look, this is all fan theory, by the way. Like, there's nothing linking these things other than the fact that we know. We pretty much can surmise that the Grey Knights were originally formed from people that were in the presence of chaos and resisted it.
Fair.
And so I think that, like, it all lines up that when you look at that Battle of Molech and you see Drago's story, that there's something there.
Yeah, I love the story of Molech as well, because we don't 100% know what happened there. Because so that's the place where the Emperor took himself and four of the Primarchs and then deleted their memories, yeah?
Yes, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, and it was, I think it was the Lion Khan, Horus, and... Can't remember, and I'm sorry, I could be totally wrong there. I shouldn't say.
I don't want to necessarily because spoilers, because I don't think Tanya's there yet, and probably some listeners are not there yet.
Dang,
we're off on a tangent, and I apologize.
No one really knows what happened, so it's actually, if I didn't know anything about it, that would make me want to read it so much more. being like, what the hell? That's such a cool, what just happened there? But yeah, the story about Horace going back there to try and figure out what is also another fantastic novel.
Yeah. So put it all together. Fast forward 10,000 years in the future, we got a shorter Horace running around the warp doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. Hmm. But
almost scene for scene.
Yeah.
Almost scene for scene. True.
Here's an interesting question. How many factions is too many factions in the game? Because I was thinking there's still so much. I was thinking about some of the Great Crusade era, like Xenos and stuff that the Marines and, you know, Custodes and everybody went up against the Astra Militarum. Like, they could bring back the Rangda. They could bring back the Mega Arachnids. It'll just have like a brand new take on Nids. Like, you make them same, but different. You could have a whole really awesome, exciting new model ranges for so many different factions.
I'd love to see it in the Horus Heresy game, like expand the Xenos stuff.
I was about to say, would it be like you would make a Great Crusade era game?
And
you would
legitimately off in tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. Nothing that we are saying at all, even the stuff, is simply wishlisting.
Yeah, good night, everybody. Yeah. It's been wonderful.
There is scope for that stuff in 40K. Like, there is scope to bring back some of these factions in 40K. Because, like, you know, the edges of the galaxy aren't super deeply explored. There's, you know, things called the ghoul stars where people just, you know, kind of just don't go there.
Season 4 of Star Trek when they go out in a high-level space.
Yeah. Extra. Like, they could introduce all sorts of stuff. So from a design point of view, maybe this is a red question, how many factions would be too much? Like, would be just overkill? Is it limitless, or is there, like, does the scope of a tabletop miniatures game, can it only support so many armies before people just stop buying any?
No, I mean, in this, because there's so much aesthetically to this, there's absolutely no reason to stop creating factions on top of factions on top of factions. Like, there's rules and everything to it, but, like, again, like, people think that to simplify things is to make it more competitive, and I just don't think that's necessarily true. I think that there can be a lot of beauty to the almost convoluted aspects of it if you want to take it that route.
I think that's beautiful.
I think it's great.
That's a great answer.
I personally, though, I would really like to see, you know, kind of the Horus Heresy kick off in that way, to where they do start introducing some of the Xenos type stuff, or, you know, human other factions, like some of the worlds that stood up and actually were a battle or a campaign and for in an extended Absolutely. Period as a way to enrich that. Cause I mean, whatever, 40K is always expanding, but I do like the grit, almost like the reenactment side of the Horus Heresy.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to see, I would be down for a Great Crusade era game, like lots more Mark II, Mark III, Mark, you know, early Mark power armor.
A super plastics, like, where one of them is clearly a Thunder Warrior, but he's, not telling anybody.
He's not. I would love that kind of stuff. And then you bring him out with, like, just some crazy, to your heart's content, Xeno. Because it's a blank slate. Like, we know about some of the big bads, like, you know, the massive orc empire around Ulanor, the Rangdon Xenocides and stuff that essentially are alluded to have possibly wiped out an entire legion or entire expeditionary forces, you know, multiple of, you know, there's a lot of scope to do some incredible narratives in that space. I think it's really untapped.
That would be cool. I mean, hopefully see that kind of stuff. Well, who knows?
Who knows?
I'm digging where things are going in Warhammer 40,000, you know, getting a preview of the new missions and the new primaries and how those are scored. The inclusion of the primary mission element you could take from the mission as part of the mission. So maybe making a little bit the secondaries, you know, maybe a little less defined, not so defined, a little less routine on each of these to kind of switch up how people interact with the game. I think that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
And again, we can.
I agree. I think.
Oh, go ahead.
I think the game's in a real interesting place. It's going to be a very interesting place in the coming months. It's I think we're singing out for a little bit of change. It's very interesting how the ninth edition, the ways to play ninth edition has evolved through the books. I think I've mentioned this on here before. The first couple of books were really quite well balanced. Like, the Space Marine book wasn't over the top in and of itself. Some of the supplements made it, you know, better or worse, or possibly
Iron Hands.
Well, yeah, well, back in 8th edition, for sure. In 9th edition, it was Salamanders for a little bit. They were kind of the best in slot, and it's gone through various changes depending on what was good at the time. And then we had the Necrons and Space Marines came out of Vertigo, and they matched up really well. They were really cool, like at the first couple of months. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of went weird where we got these... We got the first, you know, actual mission pack, the GT pack, which was a bit of a game changer. And then we had the Death Guard and the Dark Angels Codex, and that really set us on a path of he or she who is able to do the least and get points is the best. And then that was the status quo for a while. And then we went from that into the Drakari meta, which was big, and then the game just became about speed. Like, are you fast? And yeah. If you're fast, you are good. If you are not fast, well, see how you go.
You're going to struggle.
Are you fast and have lots of stuff? It's really been quite interesting to see it develop. And now we're almost back to where we were with Dark Angels and Death Guard, with some of the Covens-based builds. Dark Angels, I'm seeing the best performing Dark Angels builds at the moment are very boring. It's like, how many Obsec Terminators can you take in a list? That's your list. Congratulations. Enjoy. Have a good time.
Hey, look, firing Bolters, that many Bolters is fun.
It is. But you have all the power of stand. it's really quite interesting because Death Guard's quite good in that environment. There are a lot of things like demon armies that excel like that. There's a lot of the term people throwing around is thickness. It's the amount of wounds and toughness and durability modifiers.
How much booty you can root to the earth.
Yeah. You know, we're going down the same route with some of the Marines are going that way as well, trying to be more durable, have a lot of 2+, 1+ saves, 0+, whatever. It seems to be there's a term that people throw around a lot in MMORPGs when they're doing like raids and bosses. And if anybody's played WoW, you probably know the term like a skill check, stat check, etc. We're almost getting to like it's a stat check kind of environment where you just need to stack enough of the right profiles to be able to have a chance. Like, it's an interesting place. Have you guys been tracking it much? What do you guys think?
Oh, yeah. We look at tournament list every week.
Over on the Thursday show. but Tanya, you're essentially leaning into a thick new army in Custodes. Are you feeling like is that a reason you're doing it? You feel like it's a... I know you're just doing it for love, but are you also looking at it like, you know, if I was to take this to something competitive or try and tick up, it actually measures up all right at the moment?
I think no. I don't ever like I've never sort of looked at the meta and like that was my hobby decision. I made the decision to do it because it I always do this when I get sort of like stuck with something, I play something completely different to what I was doing before. So that's what this is, something super elite from like essentially playing cheap throwaway units for 2 years. So that's why I chose it. But I do see through playing a few games, I do see like the value to the chonkiness, if you will. Like Custodes Dreadnoughts are just money.
Yeah, really? It's almost like, do you have CP? Tick yes or no. If you tick yes, this is unkillable.
Yeah. Say like I have to study quite a bit because I am fairly new and I struggle to learn things. I actually sat down with my codex and supplement and I just listed like how many of the stratagems were more like defensive based and how many were more offensive based. And there's way more defensive based stratagems that the Custodes have access to. And that's actually quite different to what I played before as well. And I'm really enjoying the different playstyle.
Some great points. And I'm glad that you're enjoying the playstyle, Tanya, because I think that it's absolutely as intended in the design of it. I think there's a lot of great mechanics for the armies. Adam, you're talking about the difference between the speed of the Drukhari and the staying power of Dark Angels, for example, or Custodes. And when we look at it, I think that the way that we tweak the seasons and the game is being tweaked going into it, I think it's great. I think that they have a lot of good potential to work from what they've had. They've been able to see how it's played out certain ways. And you sit there and you look at it, and you say, okay, like, that's not exactly how we wanted intended for this to go, or we wanted it to be, and we just need to make some adjustments. We go back into the complexities of all the different factions, is that really the options are there in so many ways. It's just if people are deciding to play them in a lot of cases. And so I think that the seasonal tweaks, or as we're looking with calendar years and whatnot, I think that they've got it's appropriate. I don't think that they're out of bounds in a lot of ways, and that there's enough time between it. We're not waiting 3 to 5 years for a new codex in a lot of cases. We're not waiting 3 to 5 years for necessarily a new edition. We're getting seasonal adjustments, which I think is pretty awesome, honestly. Not something to be taken for granted.
Oh, well said. Thanks for bringing us back around from my Grey Knight chaos conspiracy theory fever dream.
Man, you listeners at home, you've got it all this episode. We talked to models, talked some nostalgia, speculated on some absolutely wild theories, and hung it all up at the end. We're just talking about some state of the game, you know? This is what you come for. Bit of everything. We are your sample platter of all hobby goodness.
Next week, I will no doubt try to find an excuse to talk about my last moments of Sanguinius theory.
Oh, man. I've just got this gut feeling they're going to end Night Shyamalan some awesome stuff in for the last couple of Sigiterra books.
Oh, it's good. They're barreling up to amazing stories. Like this, I've enjoyed every single one of those novels. And if you aren't caught up to the Siege of Terror, there you probably should try to get there ASAP.
I think I'm due for another Adams book report, because I just finished what's the book before Saturnite? Is it First Wall? Yeah,
First Wall. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe next week, the Adams book report, because I've just cracked into Saturnine now.
Yeah, Saturnine is probably my favorite so far.
Nice, nice. I'll see how I go with it.
Yeah, there's some really cool things in there. That's our show for this week. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Good show.
Yeah, it was a good show. Yeah, this book kicking this next kicking week. This year off strong. I guess next year we'll talk about some hobby projects we're starting or working on. I've completed the ones I was working on, so I've got kind of an open schedule. I've got some ideas.
Yeah, was that a plan that you would wrap up the Death Guard before the new year?
I as I got close, I did want to finish them by Christmas, and I did.
Nice.
So now I'm just kind of like, I've built a couple things and I haven't really started painting anything yet. But I plan to. I'm enjoying it. I'm actually enjoying like how my skill's progressing a little bit. I feel like I've maybe kind of crossed like a threshold. Some things are easier than they have appeared to be in the past.
Brilliant.
Those Terminators looked really good.
Oh, thank you.
Like, especially to know how big that batch paint was, they consistently looked really nice. So I would say that there's definitely some leveling up there.
I appreciate that. Yeah, some of that is just having confidence in the colors, and the product, and seeing other people how they're doing it, and just trying to borrow some cool techniques from people out there. So that's one of the reasons I post pictures and look at pictures of stuff.
I just one last sort of note on this. I know a lot of people hate batch painting, but I really do think that it is crucial if you want to get better at painting on multiple different fronts, right? Because when you do a big batch paint, at a certain point, you don't have to think about what color is coming next. And it really just allows you to focus in on maybe honing your brush control or working on that blend just a little bit better on the next model or whatever it is that you're doing. So I really think that batch painting, even if it's a small batch, like 10, I do think that it has value for people who are wanting to improve or even just learn how to paint faster. So
or when you get super mad at yourself because you missed one of the little sensor balls with the brass. And then you set it to the side so you remember to go back and fix it, and then you forget which one you sat to the side.
You know what? It's not a glaringly obvious thing, so nobody else is even going
to see it. Oh, no. That was some great advice you gave. It's like no one's going to see that piece of chainmail hanging off the back shoulder pad on one model.
Nope.
And so if you don't beat yourself up. That's actually what I was going to give. You gave some great advice to not beat yourself up and keep plugging away. And, it worked out. So I actually have a buddy who's just recently started Death Guard. I sent him some pictures and he's like, man, he's local. So he's going to come over and I'm going to show him some stuff. I'm going to try to pass forward what I learned and get another buddy's army on the table.
And like teaching somebody else just really solidifies what you have learned, right?
like paying it forward.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Well, folks, yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening to us jibber jabber and all our crazy, you know, tune back in for more crazy conspiracy theories.
You'll never believe what happens next.
That's right. You know what? You won't want to miss a minute of this in 2022. Oh, thank you for everyone who's left some 5-star reviews in Spotify. That is open now. You can leave some reviews where you could previously not have left reviews in Spotify. So every 5-star counts. Really appreciate it. And of course, continue to leave some comments and thumbs up and 5-star reviews in iTunes and all the other aggregators. It's been awesome. Going to keep at it. We will see y'all this year, hopefully out some places if we can, as and when we can. And we'll be back every single week. We'll see y'all.
See you then.
Bye, everybody.
What they said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.